Hey, welcome in, everybody. Mike Dempsey here with you, along with Ryan O'Halloran from the Florida Times Union. Fat Tony's in the house. Joe Fortunato hanging out at Everbank with us. Lauren Brooks is back at 1010XL World Headquarters on a Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday. Glad you are along with us as we will look back at week two of OTAs in the books. Week three getting ready to go next week. Jags not really getting much of a break, although an official day off for the players today. Let me welcome in my partner in crime, Ryan O'Halloran. What is going on? How are you?
Good, good. Thanks. Interesting day yesterday. We can get to that just because you can talk about it.
You can actually talk about it. I saw numbers of completions and attempts and things like that, and that's what happens when you make it open to the public. Really, overall, it's tough, I think, to judge the QBs too harshly with what they have, the top seven potential pass catchers sidelined, or seven pass catchers, whether they're the top seven or not.
I mean, you'd probably say seven of the top eight.
Yeah, you know, right. Pretty close to. Kerry Taylor's had a nice few days of practice.
He would probably be above like Lamar Thomas, but you know that's where you know the fans come out. And I was expecting okay, maybe 500, 600 fans. I was pleasantly surprised.
Nearly 1,800.
Yeah. So they feel bad for them as they get out there and no Cecil Shorts, no Marquise Lee, Allen Robinson, and by the practice script, they adjusted. You didn't see anybody running more than 30 yards downfield, a lot of red zone, a lot of screens, and you know, and they cut practice 20 minutes short.
Yeah, well, and I think that was probably because of some of these same reasons that you're talking about here.
The head coach said no, but I say yes.
Yeah, that's what I think. It's kind of luck of the draw, though. Fans knew going into it, good chance your top pass catchers were not going to be available to be on display. So, look, I think they're happy to see the team in action, but sure, they'd like to see those guys catching passes. I thought Chad Henne, I think, has been solid for the most part throughout OTAs. I didn't think it was his best day yesterday.
No, I mean, we had him 4-9 in 16 snaps of 11-on-11, but just from to give fans some insight is throughout that whole 11-on-11, what I kept on jotting down and kept on thinking is, okay, this is a choppy practice. This is looking sloppy. There's drops. Yet, obviously, afterwards, Gus wanted to instill some confidence publicly, you know, and say, hey, Blake Bortles made a big step today. Chad Henne's stacking up good practices. So it just shows you everything is, you know, untrained eye, trained eye, is that they had expectations for yesterday's workout, and they're, you know, weren't high. Let's put it that way.
Right, right. Yeah, exactly. And I think, too, you start the week on a bad note. Didn't like the way the tempo was at practice. I think they wanted to end on a bit more of a high note. And with Blake, I think they've been accentuating his readiness, you know, calling the offense, things like that. And the thing that Gus has been harping on for the last few days is when you make a mistake, put it behind you, move on to the next play, and don't let that play impact your next effort.
Yeah, and that's one thing, and it's the perfect word for this, and when I covered the Redskins, Kyle Shanahan was the play caller for the last 2 years I was there, and he called it the operation. He goes, from the time you hear the play, call the play. Get to the line, see the defense, make any changes. All that has to happen before you snap the ball. I think that's what they're stressing with Blake Bortles right now, is the entire operation. Then you snap the ball, and that's the next part.
Then you play. Yeah. Right. Then you play.
So, and that's one thing Gus pointed out yesterday was command, poise. And interesting, he alluded to it that he didn't – he mentioned body language. I didn't really notice bad body language before, but
right,
maybe they felt he carried some bad throws over to the next play.
He's mentioned that he's carried some bad throws over, and maybe it's not so much that he's hunching his shoulders. He's just like – he had been letting it mentally affect him at this point. I think the one good thing, you look at OTAs, and even though, as you pointed out, Chad Henne during 11-on-11s going 4-for-9 running with the starters, Blake running with the second team, he's still getting a lot of snaps in 11-on-11 right now. And that's really the only way to get yourself into that mode where you're not thinking through that process and you're just doing it, is to have the opportunities to do it.
Yeah, Bortles 17 snaps, 6 of 10 passing, and you know they gave him a little bit longer for each segment, like 5-6 plays at a time, whereas Henne was like 3 and 4. So, and then Bortles may have gotten that extra snap because of the shotgun snap that went over his head.
Right.
You know, so they evened it out that way. But, you know, a couple people asked me on Twitter yesterday when I put these numbers up, well, shouldn't Henne be getting more of the snaps because he's a starter? Not right now. You know, once you get into mid-August and these numbers out of 30 snaps should be 20 and 10, right now they should be 15 and 15, And I would say probably for the first couple weeks of camp, that should be the case as well.
And really, I think, too, what you'll see is the snaps that are going to Stanzi and Morris will diminish the closer you get to the season as well.
Yeah, I mean, Morris took all his five snaps right at the end of 11-11. I mean, that's going to be a lot for him.
Do we count the one that Martineau caught or not?
I'm the only guy that didn't see that because I maybe
are
was
you
like...
serious?
I was like maybe like, you know... standing further down
one-handed
the
left-handed. It was impressive.
Is he a lefty? He plays golf left-handed.
I have no idea if he
I want to call him the ambidextrous Brent Martineau.
Did he drop his sunflower seeds in time to catch it?
No, I think he was like
sunscreen.
Texting or something. I thought he had a phone in his right hand. He had something in his right hand.
I thought it was sunscreen.
The legend is he had just copper-toned up and was greasy. But everyone's spraying their suntan lotion these days anyway. So it was an impressive catch nonetheless. I think there's a lot of high risk, low reward activity in that.
Extremely high risk.
Right. Well, you know, if one's coming at my feet, I'm not going to make a play. He almost had no choice. It was coming midsection. He looked up. It was there. Either stick your arm out or you don't stick your arm out.
Well, usually the
very deft play.
You know, what I usually do is do the little. You do the ole. You sort of get out of the way.
Kind of let it go and just watch it.
Or like, just throw up a hand, see if you can maybe stop it.
Right. Like you throw up a hand so nonchalant. If it wants to stick in my palm, fine. Otherwise.
I'm not committing a second hand to it. Because
No. Then you get killed.
Because that affects my balance.
And there's an expectation then.
Shorts fall off.
You get two hands on the ball, you know who's sneaking up behind you. Why is there a reason or is it just dumb coincidental luck that there's a rash of nagging injuries at wide receiver?
Dumb luck. Because they're different kinds. I mean, Lee's an ankle. Robinson's a hamstring. Cecil's a calf. Thomas came in with a knee. Doss is a groin.
I think you're right, yeah.
And Mike Brown is something like that, too.
Mike Brown was a groin. I'm not sure what Doss was.
So
what a soft tissue action going on right now.
Yeah, and you know, these guys were running a ton, you know, and they have been since they were allowed on the field last month. So, you know, it's just wacky to see them all at that single position.
Right. And you know, with the young guys, talked about this earlier this week, I think with John Osher, that you got a lot of the guys that were preparing for the draft were preparing for, you know, the combine, that kind of a workout. Then they're going through a lot of the pre-draft process. If you're a guy like Marquise Lee and Allen Robinson, you got more opportunities to do stuff that's taking you away from training pre-draft. So, you know, maybe not in that kind of shape to step right onto the practice field and go full bore right away.
Yeah, and it's interesting with Lee is he, you know, everybody makes a big deal of how he said he was 100% on Friday. Well, we thought he was talking about the wrist that he banged up before he went to L.A., and then he comes back wearing a boot. So.
See, I still don't get that one.
I don't know when it happened.
I don't either. I brought that up to Gus after practice. What was it when it was revealed he was wearing the boot? Was it Monday or Tuesday of this week? And was told that, no, that's he's day-to-day. That's something that happened during last week's practice, but I don't recall that one.
I think I was paying attention enough that if a guy was limping off, we'd see it, but because I did see Ace get hurt.
I just remember Marquise gave an interview with NFL.com on Friday that was written up over the weekend where he said other than the wrist, he was 100%. So from that to go into the boot.
So basically from you know judging by that and judging by Robinson, what they said it was a couple weeks, you may not see them again until camp.
Right.
Because like Marquise told Hayes Carlion yesterday, oh, maybe late next week. Wow.
Wait, next week is probably next week's written off.
Yeah, so and judging by the fact you thought you were 100% the other
right.
You know, not Dr. Lee right now. So.
Right. Well, and look, it's not the most important thing in the world. It's the first week of June. 2 months from now, it becomes important if you're dealing with these kind of injuries.
Well, and if you're dealing with all your receivers being out for this an extended period of time in this point in the season, I think that may have some kind of effect. Not necessarily on Cecil Shorts, but you're talking about the top five on the depth chart right now being unable to practice. I mean, how long can they even practice with that many guys being down on that
side? Well, and that's why they go out and they sign a receiver yesterday, and I think that's in anticipation of not all these guys are ready to come right away.
I mean, they needed some legs by Monday.
Yeah, they really do. And, I, you know, for a guy like Allen Robinson who's going to miss a big chunk of on-field time until now, at least until training camp, you would expect. I think you're right, Tony. It's the young guys that need the rep. I don't think it's going to impact Chad Henne as much if these guys are coming in, whoever's doing their
job.
But
especially with the tempo that they want to run practice at. I mean,
right.
I was at one point yesterday, I was like, are they going to give Hearnsey a playoff?
Right.
I mean, he's been out there for a long time at this point, and they finally did give him a breather. But as fast as they want to run practice, you're wearing these guys out.
You've adopted the Gus nickname for
Hearnsey. It's
Al
a good
Hearns.
One.
Hearnsey. It's the Tiger Woods lazy nicknaming school. is how it goes.
Tiger is such a tool. But anyways.
Ryan Z. Tell us more. Tell us more. All right. Other than what we talked about, we're going to get into today. Pro Football Focus grading all the prospective starters around the National Football League. They updated their rankings yesterday. Jags not faring particularly well there.
Well, and I'm loath to even acknowledge their existence, but I will for the sake
of
the show.
Well, for the sake of
conversation. So I can disagree with them.
And there you go, and that's why we bring them up. who else has stood out to you OTA-wise?
Well, a couple things from yesterday. One guy I will look forward to seeing when the pads come on is Ziggy Hood, because he is a free agent they signed, but also changing positions. There were two plays where he was in the backfield before the ball was handed off. And then he overpowered his guy. One of them was Stankiewicz, but he, regardless who it was, ran right over him. So that's one guy. And then it was interesting in how they're using Cyprien and Guy. I mean, you know, are they playing both back? Winston closer to the line on some plays. I mean, it feels like right now they have two strong safeties and they don't have a free safety. But so that's another one. Then on offense, it's you can't really tell a lot. But I did, and one thing I'm going to put in the paper on Sunday is ran a ton of pistol yesterday. So I think they've adopted even more of that than they did last year, which they eased it in. So those are a couple things. But
Chad Henne getting loose for a big run up the middle yesterday. By the way.
That's one play I wouldn't use.
Please no.
No, the quarterback draw needs to go away. Yeah, they tried that a couple times last year. That was bad with Chad.
Manti Te'o snuffed it out the third time they ran against San Diego. I don't think we saw it again. But
he's got those third-time instincts, though, that Te'o cat. So.
Then I still expect Brandon Leonard to be there on week one.
Right.
I think they're just, A, trying to let him earn it.
Right.
And maybe just getting him some reps at other spots right now.
Okay. All right. So a couple of things to keep an eye on as we head into OTAs next week. We will look at the rankings of the prospective stars of this football team. We've got a fun this date in football history coming up for you, where we'll reminisce with the voice of your Jacksonville Jaguars for the past two decades, Brian Sexton, looking back on the 95 season in particular. And that today dovetails, I used it, for at least the third day this week with the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships fan feedback question of the day, where we ask you, and obviously you youngsters might not have as many vivid memories, but what is your favorite memory, most memorable moment that stands out to you from the Jaguars' inaugural season in 1995? Obviously no wrong answers unless you tweet us something that didn't happen in 1995, which we've had. That we had that variety of wrong answers. I'm not going to tell you what your favorite thing should be, but it should have occurred during the 95 season to qualify. Let's put it that way. Claude Nolan Cadillac brings you the show every Friday. We'll get into where the Jags rank against their peers around the National Football League. Coming up next, Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran from the Florida Times Union, Fat Tony along with me. We are live at Everbank Field. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Listen for 1010XL 92.5 FM, Heekin Orthopedic Specialist Sports Updates hourly. When you want to hear the Jaguars, just listen.
One step up the mountain. You want to get that championship, got to keep climbing. Let's go, Jags on three. One, two, three. Jags.
The flagship station of the Jacksonville Jaguars. 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, here we go. Friday, brought to you by Claude Nolan Cadillac. Jaguars today live at Everbank Field. Let's say hello to the lovely Lauren Brooks back at 1010XL World.
Hey, we've already said hi to Ryan. I don't like the way this sentence is beginning.
Hey, Lauren.
Rock your body coming back.
Well,
we know you like Justin Timberlake, Ryan.
There you go. Osher got the Biebs. He got a double dip of the Biebs earlier this week.
Who he couldn't identify.
If JT's the bumper music all day, great.
Fantastic. I think we have our
done
set out for us today. Lauren, yesterday, positive reaction from the Jaguar fan base about the budding Brolanco potential union down the road, or
my goodness gracious. The fans were fantastic, and we had a great time yesterday, and there is no romance in the air.
No romance in the air.
No romance.
Just professional admiration.
Exactly. He has fluid hips.
Has he used his hands?
This is amazing. This is better than I could have hoped for. Generally, we don't talk about centers in those terms, but nonetheless, the great Luke Polanco getting a lot of run the last 24-plus hours here on Jaguars Today. All right, always good to see Lauren out at practice, making the rounds with the boys. Absolutely.
Love it.
You got to see O'Halloran's flip-flops. I'm watching them right now out of the corner of my eye. But
wow.
I'm like Hicken, you keep yours on the floor, which I appreciate.
Oh.
So
his maneuver is feet up on the air?
Oh, yeah.
You kidding?
Wow.
Shoes off, feet on the table.
I sat on the processor side of the table, though, at 1010XL, so that was an issue for Tony and others to deal with.
You don't put your food directly onto that table.
not that you necessarily would anyway.
No, you need a layer.
But if you're going to say lay a piece of fruit down.
Yeah, and a paper towel is not enough. You need something more solid than that.
Definitely a little something in between. All right, Ryan O here with us. Big fan, by the way, of the work of the folks at Pro Football Focus. I say sarcastically, not particularly a big fan of the folks at Pro Football Focus, are you?
I'm not. I keep a lot of my own stats for that respect. And, you know, I find it impossible to grade a quarterback on...
Based on numbers,
like from... In terms of, you don't know the play call. We don't know the play call. Where is he supposed to go with the ball? That kind of thing. And especially with protections up, like their offensive line stuff, what's the assignment?
Right.
So, I mean, it's nice to look at, but you're not going to see them. You're not going to see me quoting them.
Quoting them. Nonetheless, walk.
Because they didn't have Brady rated 90 last week.
Was it 90? I know they had Brady rated as, like, what was he, like the eighth best or ninth best player over...
That was Vinny Iyer.
Was that? Oh, yeah. But also, I think they ranked him as not a top-five quarterback. Is that
correct?
What they said? He's no longer a top-five quarterback.
I don't know if he was 90, but it was much lower than you would expect Tom Brady
to be. I think that's nuts. Last year, I said, you know, look, I knew Peyton Manning would win in the runaway with MVP. I thought you could make a great case for Tom Brady to win MVP based on what he had around him to go 12-4 and make it to the AFC title game last year.
I mean... Which what he has around him is Edelman and everybody else. I mean, the Amendola signing
was a disaster. Just a dab of Gronk last year. Amendola hardly could stay on the field.
I mean,
had a couple of three rookie wide receivers.
Different running back each week.
Pretty much, you know, and that's, you're looking, and plus on the defensive side, they lost Wilfork, they lost Jerod Mayo, they lost a ton of guys.
Didn't have Aaron Hernandez.
Did not have Aaron Hernandez either. Good point. Good point, but he cracks himself up.
I do.
It's 20 minutes into Jaguars Today, and Ryan O'Halloran has amused himself, ladies and gentlemen. If you want to get in today and join the conversation, particularly in regards to favorite memories of the 95 season, you're certainly welcome to do that. You can call 641-1010. You can tweet us at MD_1010XL, at Ryan O'Halloran, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Lauren, as well. Now that I've mentioned your disdain for Pro Football Focus, let's take a look at how they rank the Jaguars' potential starters this year. They use a ranking formula. It's color-coded. It starts with blue chippers at the top. They're elite, the elite cream of the crop players. I will tell you that the Jags have no one that falls in that category, according to Pro Football Focus. Then they have high-quality starters, good starters, average starters, which you'd want your starters to be average or better, you would think. Mm-hmm. You can't have perfect, you know, above everything. Below average starter, poor starter, not enough information, and rookies who they just throw in there. They don't really...
A lot of categories.
Great. There are a lot of categories. Already taking umbrage with the category total of 8.
Well, let's just, below average and poor could be the same category. Not enough information, a rookie could be the same category. So, but digressing, I'll try to guess them.
All right. There are no elite guys.
Correct.
There are no high-quality starters, according to Pro Football Focus. For instance, Seattle's the number one team, okay? Russell Wilson is ranked as a high-quality starter, as is Percy Harvin. Those are the only two guys that get that designation on their offense. Defensively, you've got Richard Sherman and Earl Thomas, who are blue chippers. You've got Cam Chancellor, K.J. Wright, and several others on defense. You also have Marshawn Lynch, who's a blue chipper, by the way, at his position. But you have a lot of guys. So, you know, high quality. Russell Wilson, very good. Won a Super Bowl. Threw more touchdown passes than almost any QB his first 2 years yet. He's not blue chip level yet. Just trying to give you an idea of how they look at guys. So, there are...
While digressing on Harvin a little bit, I mean, it seems like this would – to rank him high quality at this point, it seems like they're looking at the whole body of work and not just last year.
I think they're saying if healthy, what he brings to the table. If you look back at 2012, I want to say he led the NFL
all-purpose?
In all-purpose yards at the time he got hurt.
Okay.
You know, so I guess that's the way they're looking at it. Right there. He's not blue chip, but he is a high-quality starter in their eyes. The Jags have five guys that they deem to be good starters. Get the late green designation, not the dark green. Offensively, they have one guy deemed to be a good starter. Who do you think that would be?
Beatles.
Projected starter. No, it's not saying Beatles.
Cecil Shorts.
Get
so they have no elite, no high quality.
No elite, Pro
Football
no high
Focus
quality.
Focus does not like Beatles.
They're not huge fans of Zane Beatles. No, although I'll tell you right now, they rank him as an average starter.
Yeah.
But Cecil's the only guy at all above average, according to the folks at Pro Football Focus on the offensive side of the football. He's ranked as a good starter.
I don't have a ton of argument with that, looking at their starting 11 right now. You know, Cecil, they're obviously going with the win healthy thing. I mean, I would put Beatles in the good, which would be the third tier, the good category, because
right.
He's been durable. He's won a lot. He's been a part of a lot of big wins. And the big thing is he's an upgrade over what you had previously.
Oh, sure.
But that's not.
I guess they're looking at compared to the best around the league. There's a school of thought from some people out there. You know, the metrics people, and I'm not saying they're right or wrong on this. I'm not going to tell you, I can judge an interior offensive lineman, but that he missed, I think it was 21 pass block assignments, which was an abnormally high number last year. A lot of people were very surprised he got the deal he got in free agency.
Well, he was the only outlier in terms of the Jaguars that people thought that they felt they had to overpay to get him right away. You know, they had a ton of room to do that. I thought they might were going to do that with a couple other guys, but they only did it with Beatles.
Tried with Alex Mack,
mm-hmm.
You know, but a different circumstance, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But they tried to spend the money on Alex Mack. All right, you've got, in addition to Cecil Shorts, who's ranked as a good starter, we told you Zane Beatles is ranked as an average starter. What they actually do for their starting lineup, they give you a halfback and a fullback. They give you three wide receivers and a tight end. So it's more than 11. It's 12 guys.
Okay.
So three players ranked as average starters in addition to Zane Beatles. Who do you think they would be? Projected starters.
Mercedes.
Yes.
So one more?
Two more.
I go Gerhardt.
See, I would have two. I would have thought average starter at least based on, you know, or go with not enough information. Because based on the small sample size, he's done pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, I was gonna put Luke Jokel in not enough information. Did they put him in average?
I would put him in not enough information as well. They put him in below average.
See, now that's
I totally agree with you on Jokel. Jokel's the one that, if anybody, he didn't play left tackle last year, and he didn't play great on the right side. But I don't know how you extrapolate that his second year. All that time to rehab, how he's going to do on the left side, I would definitely put him in the not enough information category.
Yeah, so I got two more average guys on offense. Tofu?
Tofu is ranked as below.
Okay.
Let me give it to you, all right? Zane Beatles is ranked as an average starter, so is Mercedes Lewis.
All right.
Ace Sanders was ranked as...
Ace Sanders would be lucky if he makes this team, I think.
Lucky if he makes the team?
Yes.
Elaborate.
He has to be on the field, and even before he got hurt a couple weeks ago, I thought he was on the bubble because they signed Doss, who has punt return ability, who can play all four special teams. I just think if the only thing Ace Sanders can do is return punts, do you keep him?
Don't you think he can be an effective slot receiver for this football team?
Maybe, but he's got to be available. I think he needs a big camp. A lot of people.
Tannen Doss was standing next to him on the sideline yesterday,
which helps Ace Sanders. A lot of people think Josh Evans will be the first draft pick cut. It might be Ace Sanders.
Somebody's tweeting that out right now. I guarantee you. Ryan O'Halloran.
That's what I'm throwing out there.
I'd be extremely surprised if Ace Sanders is not on this football team. I'd go borderline shocked if Ace Sanders is not on this football team. Borderline.
So do they rank him as a average receiver or average all-purpose guy?
I guess an average receiver because they list. Here's how they list the wide receiver depth chart, by the way. 1, 2, 3. Cecil Shorts, Ace Sanders, Marquise Lee, which I think is looking at it the wrong way.
Uh-huh.
I think right now, if I had to guess today because of, you know.
Everybody's healthy and they play on Sunday.
Right. You know, I think it's Allen Robinson or Marquise Lee is the two.
Mm-hmm.
And you can argue Ace Sanders is the three because he fills a specific role, but I don't think he's ahead, going to be ahead of both of those guys. In fact, he may be the four in real sense, you know, but because of the way positions are split up with the split end, the flanker, the slot, different things, that he may be on the field in three wide receiver sets. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay, so
yeah, because you know, regardless of position, there is going to be a pecking order, and I think everybody agrees that the top three are going to be Shorts, Lee, and Robinson.
Yes.
Then you get into, you know, Ace is Ace of, you know, can he be there? You know, it's going to be tough. I mean, people say Mike Brown. It's going to be tough to cut Mike Brown because, you know, when he's in there, he's caught some passes. He knows the system. He doesn't make a lot of mistakes. You see a guy like Kerry Taylor, yeah, they're in shorts and helmets, but he showed something at the end of last year. So there's probably, and Allen Hurns is also impressed. So there's like seven or eight guys competing for maybe two spots. That's why I just throw it out there.
All right. The other guy that they rank as an average starter is Austin Pastor, which.
Good for him, but.
Right. And if anything. You rank him as an average guy, and I guess based on the one-month sample you had at right tackle, you're trying to extrapolate what you think Luke Joku will be at a left tackle position. That's the one. I mean, I don't know, and it's not just because of draft pedigree. They're both on the free agent market right now, and you could sign either one of them, and all they could make was $1 million a year. How long would it take Luke Joku to get a job?
Yeah,
how many
people
would line up? And I think Pastor would probably have a job under those circumstances as well if you could play – for the National Football League, I just think the line will be considerably longer in the Joku column.
Well, if you're going to put, you know, and I thought Pastor exceeded all expectations last year because there were none playing right tackle. So my thing is if you put him at average, then that to me brings up, that allows, that means other guys should be average too. You know, because if you're looking at, you know, if healthy, you know, like you said, Joku over Pastor, no brainer. So, you know, it's obviously subjective, but it's we're disagreeing with most of them.
We're disagreeing with a lot of them, and they try to take the subjectivity out of it. And like you said, though, it depends on what numbers you want to rely on and what those numbers actually show. The one guy they list as a below-average starter is Mike Brewster, and he's gotten as much.
He hasn't played a snap in center in the NFL.
Right.
Not enough information.
You could go that category as well. They choose not to. I guess they're going on guys that they've seen play. I don't know how many guys actually get the designation of not enough information on here because I haven't. Well, there's one. Menelik Watson with Oakland. Didn't probably play a snap last year with the Oakland Raiders, right?
He was hurt.
Yeah. And so that's. But. You know,
but a handful of games in the position you're not going to play that year, that you weren't drafted to play for
right.
Luke Joku.
Deems you to be a below-average player.
That's enough information.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
First, let's get back to Ace here quick. Because people are responding to this now. Anybody who says that they think a guy is a lock to make this roster, and it's not your top 15 or 16 guys, it's ridiculous. They brought in 71 new guys out of the 90-man roster since this regime came in. I mean, there's only a couple guys safe on this team. So if you can't stay on the field, you're not productive. I mean, let's face it. This team had the worst punt return unit in the league last year. You know, somebody, you got to make somebody miss at some point. So I feel like if I'm piling on whatever, I'm just say, hey, there's always one or two or four guys that don't make the team that you
were
shocked about.
That surprised you. Yeah. No,
sure.
I get it. But I still look at what I've seen him do when he was healthy. I thought he look confident out there. I think he's got a lot of confidence. The fact that they could stretch him and play him more in different spots than they anticipated. I think he's shown some versatility, and he does have to do better and be more explosive in the punt return game. That goes without saying. And he, particularly when he sits here, Tony, and tells us that he feels that's his bread and butter to making this football
team. And I think
team.
Because of the roles the team was asking him to play last year, maybe some of that suffered. Maybe there wasn't as much focus on what he was able to do on punt return because he was being asked to be a starting receiver for this team, and that wasn't ever the intention, but they draft two guys in the second round. Maybe that takes some of the pressure off of A. Sanders going forward, and he can focus more on that special teams thing. But he obviously was a guy they brought in to be a punt returner and was mostly ineffective in that role for this team last year. So it's certainly a valid point to say that he didn't do that part of the game well.
All right, let me give you top to bottom, by the way, just because we've kind of pieced this together. We'll look at defense next. Below average, Chad Henne, Toby Gerhart, Tofu at fullback. Average, Mercedes Lewis, your tight end, your wide receiver core. Cecil Shorts, good starter. Average starter in Ace Sanders, rookie in Marquise Lee, thereby really ungraded. Average in Zane Beatles, below average in Mike Brewster, rookie in Brandon Linder, and an average starter in Austin Pastore. That's what you have on the offensive side. Ryan O'Halloran.
Hey, that smells like a juggernaut to me.
Ryan O'Halloran, Scott. By the way, overall team ranking, what are you guessing out of 32?
29th.
32.
Ah!
A little too optimistic there.
Give these guys some credit.
You're a little too optimistic. Although people look at teams that had bad years last year, and you know, you look at teams. Well, this team is talented. Can they bounce back? I think a lot of people feel the Atlanta Falcons may fall in that category. They lose Julio Jones. Roddy White was on and off injured all year. So if you get those guys back healthy, despite the loss of Tony Gonzalez, you feel like your offense may move better. They're ranked as the 30th best roster in terms of pure talent.
I think. I mean, don't you think there's a very possible chance Atlanta could just be god awful again this year?
That window
is closed.
It certainly could because they've been struggling to find pass rush for a while. I don't think they really addressed it this off season. You've got an aging Steven Jackson who you get rid of Tony Gonzalez. I don't know what they're going to do. I know who their options are in the middle, but none of those guys live up to Tony Gonzalez. You may be relying on Devontae Freeman to come in and carry a lot more of the load than you expected as a rookie running back out of Florida State. We'll see. And that division, man, I mean, Carolina's defense was outstanding last year. New Orleans is always a threat to win double-digit games, and at the very least. And then you got the Bucs. We'll see what they make of it down in Tampa this year. We'll come back. We'll take a look at the defense. How does Pro Football Focus rank the projected starters for your Jacksonville Jaguars? We'll discuss next. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, Fat Tony here with you live at EverBank. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday. Glad you're along Jaguars Today. Brought to you every Friday by our friends at Claude Nolan Cadillac. Since 1905, Claude Nolan Cadillac serving as the preferred Cadillac dealer here in Northeast Florida. They've got the largest selection of new and pre-owned Cadillacs in Jacksonville with absolutely no dealer fees. And the only Cadillac dealer in North Florida to sell and service the ELR is Claude Nolan Cadillac. They've got an on-site body shop. They'll paint and repair any model of Cadillac. Claude Nolan Cadillac guaranteeing you that they'll offer you the highest level in customer care and service. The elegance and experience of driving a Cadillac, only a step away. Build your lasting relationship by logging on to ClaudeNolan.com. That's ClaudeNolan.com, or visit them at 4700 Southside Boulevard. Call 642-5111 for more information with Claude Nolan Cadillac, our Friday sponsor. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran. By the way, use the hashtag Jaguars Today. People are getting sucked in by the at Jaguars Today Twitter handle. For instance, I sort through and I saw somebody reply to that. Somebody said, man, really loving Jaguars Today. We appreciate that. But just know that anything they tweet is not directly affiliated with the program. Although they don't seem like they're out to sabotage us in any way as of yet. Don't know who's behind that. Could be O'Halloran.
So it does exist.
It does. Oh, yeah. And I thought about, when I first started, I said, should I just change my Twitter handle to Jaguars Today? But
you got too many other irons.
I do a few other different things, and I think the fantasy freaks out there would be confused, and we're a simple lot. So better to leave it as is.
Specifically, they don't want a team name in your name.
This is true. This is true. Probably that. But anyway, use the hashtag Jaguars Today. And today we're asking you, what is your favorite memory from the 95 season? I thought that was deadly accurate. We're a simple lot. We're We're easily amused by, and speaking of numbers, we love the numbers.
We do.
Don't we? That's all we live by, the numbers, Tony. It's the lifeblood of football. It's why they play the game. It's why they're building these scoreboards here.
Yeah, there are a lot of numbers out there, and we've been talking just in the last few minutes about Ace Sanders.
Segway.
Yeah, about Ace Sanders, because Ryan said that he thinks he's in a fight to make this roster this year. And if you look at the punt return numbers specifically, which he's drafted in the fourth round to come in here and improve that unit on this team, Ace Sanders had 25 punt returns for 140 yards. That's 5.6 a return. If you go to ESPN and their stats page, that's the lowest qualified punt returner on their list.
Not good.
Not good. A long of 17 yards. When you compare that to Tandon Doss, who had 23 attempts at a punt return, so just two fewer, and averaged 15.6 yards a return, the biggest in the NFL last year. That's a 10-yard difference between those two guys, including an 82-yard punt return for a touchdown for the Ravens last season. So, yeah, there is something to the Jaguars may have brought Tandon Dawson to be a special teams type player. Maybe that does put some pressure on Ace Sanders for that roster spot.
Well, at the very least, that's what it is pressure, competition.
No doubt.
You know, because this was a special teams group that was good in covering kicks, covering punts, and returning kicks. Their only downside was returning punts, so it can't be just all the blockers.
He's got to do better in the preseason, certainly in that regard. But I do think Tandon Doss, at one point a few years ago, was being groomed by Baltimore to be the eventual replacement for Anquan Boldin. He was given every opportunity to help that team as a receiver, and really
didn't happen.
Didn't happen. Doesn't mean it can't with somebody else, but I think, I guess, I'm as much intrigued by the versatility that Ace Sanders showed unexpectedly last year, that you've got that. It's still a team without a lot of great weapons. I've seen, and I realize it's college, but I've seen him break ankles in the open field, both in punt returns and catching the football, and he had extremely short hands in South Carolina. I'm at the point where, at this point in time, borderline shocked, I'm going to go with. Borderline shocked.
Yeah.
But if it happens.
Well, keep in mind, too.
I'd be surprised.
I'm looking at the numbers right now. Ace Sanders was 23rd out of 23. When you look at the 20 and 21 spots, these have been premier punt returners in this league in just the last handful of years. Darren Sproles came in at 20.
Don't ruin the jig. You're ruining it.
With an average of 6.7 yards.
They dumped him. They got rid of him, right?
And at 21, Patrick Peterson was 21st in the league on the average punt returns, and he had 8 more attempts at it.
Bum.
Yeah.
Waiver wire.
Tool.
All right, let's look at the defensive side of things. Let me give you here's how they line up the Jags. They give you three corners in the mix. Okay, they give you your left corner, your right corner, and your slot corner. Okay, they also give you obviously your two defensive end, two defensive tackles, a middle weak, and Sam linebacker. I'm not sure what that Sam designation is. Need to have the auto graded here. And they give you your two safeties as well. So, and keeping in mind, they rank Josh Evans as the starting safety. They do note that Winston Guy could end up winning the free safety job over Josh Evans. So, with that being said, Cecil Shorts was the only, by Pro Football Focus, graded good starter on the offensive side of the football. They have 4 such players out of 12. On the defensive side of the football, see how many you can name, Ryan O'Halloran.
4 on good.
For good, yep. Which is as high a ranking as they have.
Red Bryant
is one, correct.
Chris Clemens
would be one. Those are your two defensive ends.
All
of a sudden, the Jags have 2 good defensive ends. Let that sink in for a second. Not by anyone's ranking, ever.
Send Derek Marks?
I would have thought the same thing, but no. Not send Derek Marks. Who else?
I would put Plez Lesney there. I don't think they like him.
They don't like him.
Yeah.
I would put him there as well. I think Derek Marks is in the conversation. Two guys.
Oh, aren't they fans of Alan Ball?
Big fans of Alan Ball. Alan Ball is one, and I'll give the other one's Will Blackman. They rank him as a slot corner, and they think he's a good starter. And I think you could make, I mean, both of those guys had pretty solid years for the Jags as pickups last year, so I'm not going to quibble too much with their characterization of those as good players here.
Yeah, it's okay, I guess. I mean, you know, they're good players. I mean, good and average seem like they sound like the same word. I mean, I would have had Marks in the good category. I mean, because I think he may be the best player on defense entering this year, just in terms of what he did last year. So, but Bryant and Clemens are upgrades.
I would agree with you on Marks, and just look at what we're saying now. Bryant and Clemens are clearly upgrades. They've been solid players. They've been, you know, Chris Clemens at one time might have been even a ranking higher than this pre-injury, mm-hmm. right? So, not the purely elite level, but the really quality guys. So now you're talking about three of your four defensive line projected starters, and I realize they're going to run, you know, a lot of rotation in there. That's pretty good. They haven't had that, you know, since the days of Henderson and Stroud. And now those guys were at an even higher level at their peak, but haven't had so much positive talk, I think, about the D-line in recent years.
Especially the last 2 years when, being, people thought Babin was their best player.
Right.
And clearly not this year. So what it does, I mean, it's name recognition. There's reputation involved in these, but also there are guys who have earned their stripes. And like you said, Clemens, I mean, you know, guys second year after the knee injury take another step forward, or they're done.
And he even said he felt like the last part of last year he'd gotten back to normal. Mm-hmm. So a full off season at feeling normal, you got to have, you know, reasonably high hopes for him. Here's the average starters that they rank for the team. This is where it falls apart for me a little bit. In your linebacking core, they rank Geno Hayes is average, Dakota Watson is average, Posluszny is below average.
Yeah, I don't get that because, I mean, I would put Watson in not enough information.
You could certainly put him in not enough information. Posluszny, even if he was, I don't know what alternate he was to make the Pro Bowl last year, he's among, let's say, the five best inside linebackers in the AFC, a half dozen best inside linebackers. Number of teams run 3-4, so we're talking about more than 16 guys at that position. At worst, doesn't that have to make him an average player at his position?
I mean, just from the productivity.
Last year was maybe the best year of his career.
Yeah, and he made more impact plays last year.
Yeah.
A couple of the interceptions, return one for a touchdown, a couple sacks. So, I mean, I vehemently disagree.
Roy Miller ranked as below average as well.
I mean, you base it on last year he was playing with one arm.
Right. And now you wonder, I mean, is that what they're looking at just last year? Or are they looking at the body of work for the career? I would agree with you, Dakota Watson. I don't know how you have enough information to really rank him. Ciprian and Grotz, by the way, both ranked as average guys. I think a lot of people feel that Cip has the capability to elevate that a level. I mean, I think if we were doing these rankings, at the end of the year, you could reasonably hope to have Red Bryant, Derek Marks, Chris Clemens, Posluszny, one or two of those corners, maybe Ciprian, in the good, you know, better than average category. And that's, you know, now you're talking about six, seven, eight guys on the defensive side of the football.
I mean, I like Grotz a lot because I think he's just going to be around the ball. I mean, he showed that in spurts. He's got to stay healthy, but I mean, I think he can be their number one corner.
Had a nice week of practice.
Yeah.
From what, you know, we can't really give you too many details or any, but
Take our word for it.
But I thought he looked good. Of course, I've been telling you, Henny's been looking good. And he goes out there yesterday and he sailed a couple, to put one up in the crowd, I think, yesterday.
But yeah, I think Grotz can be the top, can be in that good quality by the end of this year as well.
All right. So anyway, it all adds up to the Jags being the 32nd ranked roster.
So did they lump everybody in the good, average, below average?
They had, you mean for Jacksonville?
For defense.
No, Josh Evans was below.
Okay.
But outside of that, and they did acknowledge that Winston Guy may end up taking that job. A little bit later on, we'll take a look at some of the other rankings. No surprise, Seattle at the top of the list. We'll show you where the AFC South stacks up in comparison to the Jacksonville Jaguars. San Francisco, Denver, New Orleans, and Philadelphia, interestingly enough, round out the top five. Philadelphia will be on that early season schedule for your Jacksonville Jaguars in week two. Coming up
Philadelphia, week one.
Week one, that's right.
Yeah.
Philly and then Washington, right? Is that right?
Yep.
I think Philadelphia's offense against Jaguars defense would be a great test for the retool defense. I just see matchup problems all over the field.
Well, I mean, that's what, and early in the season, they're probably going to be as healthy as they're going to be. They're going to, that pace of play fell off as the season went on for Chip Kelly. They're going to come out there. It's a good thing the Jags are practicing at a breakneck pace right now, because that's how they're going to try to run them in week one. No question about that. This date in football history coming up next, it's got some Jaguar connections to it. We'll explain that, and we'll be joined by the longtime voice of your Jacksonville Jaguars, Brian Sexton, looking back on the inaugural season for the Jags back in 95. That is the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships Fan Feedback question of the day. What is your favorite memory from the 95 season? Tweet us or post on the Facebook page, Jaguars Today. Facebook.com/JaguarsToday. I'll spit it out in the correct order one of these points in time. Or send us a tweet at MD_1010XL, at Ryan O'Halloran, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Lauren. We'll be back with this date in football history. A Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday continues. Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Come on, O'Halloran. What you got?
I'm drawing a blank.
Oh, come on. Timberlake's finest work right here. I have no idea what it is. What is it, Lauren?
Think McDonald's.
Think McDonald's. It's the Big Arches.
I'm loving it.
Big Arches.
There
remix.
You go.
Golden Arches.
Yeah, give us some hits, for God's sake.
Tony's loving it over there. The fact that you even knew that was a Timberlake song is impressive to me.
I had no idea. The McDonald's hint's what got.
Oh, you did. Oh, yeah. You just went with that.
Yeah.
Consider yourself stumped.
I was thinking of a delicious McRib. When are they coming back? They're really. They lost their luster last season, by the way. As a quick.
You were disappointed in the season of the McRib.
They had a bad year.
Had a bad year.
I think it's like a new formula or something.
Bounce back. They
to
need
their pressed
to
meat.
Rethink
product.
The onion.
I don't know. Maybe a little heavy on the onions this year. Do you have a particular go-to fast food delicacy? The McRib for me had long been number one, period. Just crushes all competitors.
I like the Chick-fil-A nuggets.
Okay.
Those are good. McDonald's fish filet.
Filet of fish. Yeah. There you go.
I think that was on Martino's 5 when we did it.
I think it was, too. These guys like to be outside
the
box a little bit. All right, let's take a look at what happened.
But nothing beats Jack in the Box anywhere in the country.
Really? I know that's a West Coast deal.
Yeah, there was the week we were out in San Jose with the Jags. I had one down the street, and by Thursday, I just couldn't go there anymore.
Really? Better than Five Guys?
Oh,
wow.
No, because I get the tacos.
Jack. We're on a first name basis.
Well, that's what the cup says. It says Jack.
Jack. Do you have any collector's cups at the house?
Well, they don't have plastic.
No?
But I had some tacos that week. They have some good cheeseburgers. It was
they have tacos at Jack in the Box.
And they deep fry them.
The look on O'Halloran's face right now.
Joe Fortunato is
you should be a food writer, not a football writer. You're taking way too much pleasure in this. All right, let's take a look at what happened on this date in football history.
And now, this date in football history.
Hey, that's what I said. This date in football history brought to you by the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville. Here we go, 1966. The NFL and the AFL announced that they would merge, and they did, in fact, merge. And, of course, they announced the merger in 66. I thought the merger was forced in 69 by the Super Bowl.
Yeah, because, I mean, I thought it was, I guess, 69 during the break because the common draft era started in 70.
Right. So. I wonder if they're saying that they agreed to play
Super Bowl
a championship. I mean, that's not really a merger of sorts, but nonetheless, Joe Namath also, who ties in heavily into NFL, AFL history, resigned from the NFL on this date in 69 and obviously rescinded that after Pete Rozelle, the former commissioner, said he had to sell his stake in a bar. I remember reading there was some talk about some unsavory underworld types or something of the like that may have frequented that place. I don't know.
I'm sure there's a lot of stuff going on in a lot of places.
Is that who Manziel really most closely profiles to right now? Is he going to be, you know, just in terms of the celebrity, the limelight, that kind of thing that comes with him?
That sounds like a good comparison.
Right? I mean,
Namath was, maybe he came into the league banged up.
Yeah.
You know, so he had a bad knee already.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that seems like a good... good comparison.
Also, this date in football history from the always impeccable thefootballsearchengine.com. Bill Bates, former Jaguars special teams coach here and longtime NFL player with the Cowboys. And he went to Tennessee and was infamously, I believe, run over by Herschel on one of those infamous highlights. I think he was. Is that the My God, a Freshman highlight, or am I getting that confused? with something else. But he did truck Bill Bates, I believe, in one of those famous calls from back in the day in Georgia history. And also, Randy Jordan's birthday is today, former Jaguar running back who scored the first touchdown in team history. And we're getting ready to welcome in Brian Sexton to discuss that. Let's go back in the time machine, 1995, week two on the road versus Cincinnati.
It is third and five, ball at the 29-yard line. Here comes Howard in motion. Here comes the blitz. Jordan has it far side, 30, 35, 40, room to run. Midfield, 50, he's gone. 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5, touchdown, Jaguars, 71 yards.
All right, we just heard Randy Jordan's first touchdown, and of the Jaguars' first touchdown in team history. The guy on the call, of course, the longtime voice of your Jacksonville Jaguars, Brian Sexton, joining us once again on Jaguars Today. What's up, Brian?
Hey, how Mike, are how are you?
Do you like hearing your old highlights?
No. Oh, no, I was 25 years old and hadn't quite grown into the job. But, I mean, I do like the memories that they elicit. You know, it brings back, I think I told you guys the story about the Emerald Bowl.
Sure.
And it brings back memories of Montgomery Inn and Great Ribs the night before. And I do remember the play vividly, and it was the first touchdown in Jaguars history. And Randy Jordan was one of the good guys. You know, you didn't expect him to do much. You know, no one knew who he was, and he never did really grow into that, you know, feature player. But, boy, he was a guy everyone around here enjoyed.
And certainly a great moment. You come off the opening loss, 10-3. You're probably thinking, when's the offense going to kick in for this football team?
Right.
And it started to picking up, even though the wins didn't come for a few more weeks. The offense really did start to pick up in week two, though.
Well, you knew that it would. I mean, not only did you have a veteran quarterback in Steve Beuerlein, but we had seen what Mark Brunell was capable of doing. You didn't have a lot of skill position players at that point in time. I mean, Jimmy Smith was on the roster, but no one knew what he was. He was a special teams player. And the running game was, you know, James Stewart was a rookie, and it was kind of hit and miss what they would be able to do. But you could see the design in what Tom Coughlin wanted to get done. And, of course, Kevin Gilbride's a guy who, you know, for a long time has had success. So you could kind of see the makings of it. But here's what we knew with an expansion team. It was likely to be a long time, you know, before we saw the kind of progress that we wanted to.
From the time you were hired until that first touchdown, did you know exactly what you were going to say?
No
catchphrase, no.
No, you know, I did get asked about that all the time, and I was never a catchphrase kind of guy. Bob Costas told me when I had a chance to visit with him when I was in college, he said, don't worry about that kind of stuff. You know, just let it flow. Otherwise, you just get known for those three or four words that you say. He said the classic broadcasters, you know, use them here and there, but I wouldn't go that route, and so I didn't.
It seems to be other sports more than football.
Yeah,
right?
Baseball. You know, the Harry Careys and the Jack Bucks and those guys of the world, they all had them. But I also knew I wasn't probably going to be calling a lot of touchdowns early on, so I didn't get too hell-bent on having one particular phrase.
We are asking people today to weigh in with their memories of the 95 season in honor of Randy Jordan's birthday today. And just for you, overall, was it the first game, the fact that I'm working in the big leagues, the big leagues have come to Jacksonville? What is your one overriding moment from 95?
I think the best moment of 95 from my perspective was in Houston, when Desmond Howard caught the touchdown pass and they got that first win. The elation on the plane ride home, and just that sense that, okay, you know, they're going to get some things done. That was the high point. The low point was the 7-game losing streak, you know, in the middle of the season. I mean, and look, we knew it was coming. You knew it was going to happen that year, but Tom was just a bear to deal with. And sitting in this studio and talking to him every week, I mean, he was just like, do I have to come back? What are you going to say?
Right.
But overall, there was so much work that went into putting that team on the field and getting everything put together from the time that I got here in the summer of 94 through the 95 season. At the end of the 95 season, it was like, thank goodness that one's over. You know, when does 96 begin?
You mentioned that losing streak. You look at the results. They lost by one, lost by four, lost by eight, then lost by 10, lost by 44. Going into that last game, was everybody just waiting for it to be over with?
Yeah, there was no doubt. I mean, the entire front office was exhausted. I mean, they had gone overtime to put on a game day experience. obviously the football guys had been working for Tom since, you know, early 94, and they had not stopped. There was no break in that schedule. And the players were exhausted because Tom beat the crap out of them during training camp. I mean, it was a long training camp. We reported to Stevens Point, Wisconsin in early July, and it went all the way through. I mean, it was just, it was long, so everyone wanted it to be over. And the fact that Mike Hollis kicked that game winner, and they were able to beat the Browns, a division opponent, twice that year. Of course, the Browns were on their way to Baltimore in a couple of weeks, but it was Christmas Eve, and when the ball went through, it was just, I mean, you forgot the fact that they were 4-12 for a minute, and everybody was able to relax and enjoy that game in the end of that season. The way Hollis put that ball through there gave everybody a chance to smile, but make no mistake about it, we slept for the first time in a year and a half.
Brian Sexton, we know you got to run. You got some stuff going on this morning. 30 seconds, quick impressions of what you've seen out of OTA so far.
A lot of speed and a lot of athleticism. Lots of young guys on this roster that people may not talk about. Demetrius McCray, Jeremy Harris, Leroy Reynolds. There are a lot of players that people aren't focusing on, and guys who will make a huge step from year one to year two. Everyone's talking about Bortles and the rookie receivers. Focus on Denard Robinson. Focus on guys like McCray and Harris, and let's see what they can do in year two.
Enjoying the new job?
Yeah, I'm having fun.
All right, we're enjoying it as well. Brian Sexton, longtime voice of your Jacksonville Jaguars. Thanks for stopping by, man.
Anytime you need me.
And happy birthday again to Randy Jordan, born on this date in 1970, 44 years young today.
And current running backs coach with the Washington Redskins.
Breaking it down is what Ryan O'Halloran is doing right now.
I got Randy Jordan mixed up with Lamont Jordan.
Lamont Jordan, who was the University of Maryland product, went to the Jets.
Raiders.
Went to the Raiders. That's where he got his money. He kind of followed the Michael Turner path, where he kind of cooled his heels for a few years as a backup. Had a decent first campaign, as I recall, with Oakland, but then kind of tailed off after that.
Hit the wall.
Always a little pudgy, he looked, didn't he?
He's more of a bowling ballish.
Yeah, he was definitely more in the bowling ballish category than the scat back. Your This Date in Football History look all week has been brought to you by the best fence company in Jacksonville. Their mission to fabricate and install the highest quality product at a competitive price while still providing unsurpassed customer service. Get a professional free estimate at your convenience. The best fence company in Jacksonville, 268-1638, or visit bestfencejacks.net. For more information. Thanks to Brian Sexton for stopping by. It's Cardinal and Cadillac Friday. We'll take a timeout, come back, and we'll look more at Pro Football Focus. We see how they rank the Jags. How do they rank their division opponents and the rest of the National Football League? Ryan O'Halloran and myself, Fat Tony, will take a look at that next on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Yes. Right. We got
wheelhouse.
The fist pump.
Yes.
Wheelhouse, huh? What do you got?
Love Stone.
All right. So excited. Ryan O'Halloran, Timberlake band.
Whoa.
It was by request. I sent it to her.
Thank you.
Oh.
Yeah.
Don't ruin it.
See, now that's what I would do, Warren. I would let people behind the curtain and know what happens in these off-air discussion moments. Far be it from you to do such a thing, but O'Halloran, I thought it. Wow, I was so impressed. It was in his wheelhouse. He got so excited.
I'm just glad she found it.
Through the fist. Oh, okay, was that what it was?
I mean, it's off. It's off a name. It's a name song, but you know, you're always happy when the producer delivers.
Well, Warren always delivers for you. There you go. We can only imagine.
What do you think? Never mind.
Who do you like other than Timberlake?
Well, I am. I talked Bruce Springsteen with Frank Frangie yesterday.
Yeah, can't do that.
Can't do that. Obviously, you two we've been mentioned.
Right, yeah, that's right.
Actually, you know, I do like Coldplay.
Okay.
You know, not for everybody.
We'll do a Coldplay week for you, and we'll definitely do a U2 week for you.
Who else? Oh, big Rolling Stones, big AC/DC.
I'm taking copious notes.
Listen for this next Thursday. Is that what we decided for you next week? Next Thursday.
AC/DC day. That'd be cool.
Tentative schedule for next week. I believe we're shooting for Mark Long on Monday. David Garrard comes in on Tuesday to co-host Jaguars Today, and then he takes his summer vacation. He'll be out of town till August, so a couple of month hiatus. Dave's been great.
He'll be playing football by the time he gets back.
They will be. He may be, for all we know.
Yeah.
You know? I'd take that clipboard money,
no doubt,
in a heartbeat. As a matter of fact, I will submit myself right now as available, and Tony, you can step into my shoes. take over Jaguars today. I will be a clipboard holder for one season at NFL minimum, please. Also, next Wednesday, I believe it'll be Johnny O, the senior writer from Jaguars.com. Bitter feud between the Jaguars.com and the Times Union guys as to who the better beat writers are. And Rhino Halloran on Thursday and me and Tony next Friday. That's the tentative plan for next week's full onslaught of OTAs. How will things be different in the minicamp than OTAs? Contact allowed in the minicamp?
Same rules. First two are open to the public.
Is this just a case of now it's mandatory?
I think that's the only thing. And you, I think you, there may be some logistical stuff where you can keep them in the building for a longer meeting or an extra session.
Okay.
But the big thing is that mandatory, which once Clemens arrived, isn't an issue here.
It's not right. They're already getting 100% participation, and it's interesting. You know, generally there are one or two guys that miss, and I'm sure there'll be some guys that miss, and Gus has indicated probably next week that you might have a guy miss for a personal reason or two, whatever the case may be. I wonder how it's being received in San Francisco with Vernon Davis. And look, he's a vet. Usually players don't get on each other about it, especially if you've got status. You know, at least you can't get anybody to go on the record and say they were bothered by Fred Taylor or Maurice Jones-Drew ever not working out with the team. But Vernon Davis has come right out to say, the reason I'm not there is I need a new contract, and the reason I want a new contract is I need to continue to build my brand.
Interesting end of the comment there. I mean, contract, okay. That's
right. I'm underpaid, feel like I've outperformed it.
Goes on every year.
Sure.
The build the brand part, to me, if I'm a teammate, if I'm a Niner, the first part of that sentence, I would say, okay, you got to do what you got to do because we're all trying to get paid. You're an established guy. I trust you're going to come here ready to go. Build your brand part. Okay, who are you here for? When you come here...
He's here for Fantex, Fantex yeah. Holdings, and the people who purchased $10 shares in Vernon Davis, apparently.
So I would... it would be interesting if... he's holding out to build his brand. Is he going to do the...
Well, he says the contract, it's not the holdout, it's... He wants the new contract because getting a new contract would go a long way to helping him continue to build his brand. It would also give you more money, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, is he paying for his brand?
I don't quite understand this whole situation. And look, I just think it's kind of silly. 2 years left in your deal. You knew they had to get Kaepernick done. Now, they've gotten Kaepernick done, and they've gotten him done at, from what most people look at as a pretty team-friendly deal. For right now, the only guarantees are for injury. If they decided in 3 years that he's just not the QB we thought he was, if they have up until April 1st of every offseason to cut him loose, they'll take the salary cap hit, but the salary cap keeps going up. That doesn't seem to be an issue.
I mean, Vernon's got to get in line because he's already on his second deal.
Right.
And Kaepernick's got taken care of. They, you know, they have some other guys, other draft picks they need to get done for their second deals. And then I think the 1,000-pound gorilla in the room is, what's Jim Harbaugh's future?
Yeah.
Talking to a couple Niners writers at the combine in winter's meetings is they think Jim Harbaugh is a short-term guy in San Francisco.
Is it because of his choice, or do you think he just rubs people the wrong way? Call it his intensity or whatever, his personality.
Well, I think his intention, he wants to run the whole show. Because he looks like the kind of guy, my way works, and I want to do everything.
Are you in some ways... saying, I mean, you've got a guy in Harbaugh who...
Great coach.
He brought in Kaepernick. He's kind, you know, I think you've got to give him credit with the quarterback background for helping develop him and bring him to this point, making the call to move on from Alex Smith when Alex Smith was playing extremely good football, got him to the Super Bowl, got him back to the NFC title game last year. Are those two joined at the hip? I mean, is your investment in Kaepernick maximized if Jim Harbaugh flies the coop after next year?
I wouldn't think so, because I think Greg Roman would be the new head coach, who is your offensive coordinator, who has designed a lot of that offense as well. You know, if both of them...
So if that happens, then you feel like the continuity is there and you're good.
Yeah, because there's so many...
The would-be Jaguar coach, Greg Roman.
Most likely would have been if they would have lost against Green Bay at home in the division playoffs, because he would have been on the first plane to Jacksonville. But so... I think that would hold down the continuity, because, and then plus there's so many other good players on that team, you know, you can start taking, you know, as long as you keep that core in place, you should be okay. But, I mean, the Harbaugh to Cleveland stuff, which blew up at the combine, was fascinating because clearly both sides were looking for some kind of exit strategy.
Right.
And if the Niners are the Niners were of the mind where they're probably saying, hey, if you're going to leave, we're at least going to get something for you. So, you know, because they probably figured that probably won't happen. Once your contract's up, you can go whatever you want.
Sure.
So that's a nice little subplot to this season.
All right. San Francisco, by the way, ranked, and I don't think surprisingly, the second best roster in the NFL. Yet Seattle, check out Seattle. We're talking about the blue chippers, the elite guys. They had Lynch, Richard Sherman, Earl Thomas. Then they had, at the next level, high-quality starters. We mentioned this earlier, Russell Wilson, Percy Harvin, Michael Bennett, Brandon Mebane, Cliff Averill, K.J. Wright, and Cam Chancellor. So you're talking about 7-10 guys out of, I think they ranked 24 starters because they give you the nickel corner and all that stuff. So 10 out of 24 being either high-quality or blue chip. And I don't think you can quibble with most of those guys.
You can't, you know, and where they're going to be tested, do they have that core of 10? Is their depth has taken a big hit this year? Can those role players rise up to be starters and make it into that average category?
And you take a lot of those guys in addition to that, that they rank as good starters, still on the plus side of average. And, I mean, they're built for the short term to, barring injury, to be a deep contender for the next several seasons. And it really does highlight, though, you look at some of these guys and where they got them in the draft. I know we've talked about this a ton, but when you fall into a Russell Wilson in round 3, and you can say we thought he was the best player in the draft, which is what they said that offseason after they took him, I tend to believe you wouldn't risk him being taken if you really felt that behind Luck and RG3 he was the next best guy, that you'd let him risk going to somewhere else in the second round. But regardless, and then you hit on Richard Sherman in what, round 4 or 5, whatever it was.
Chancellor was a 5th or 6th
round. Right, so you're talking about getting guys who are among the best at their position in the mid to later rounds. And, you know, good scouting, yes, but if you knew those guys were going to be as good as they turned out to be, you probably don't wait that long to take them, too. There's a little bit of luck involved.
Yeah, and if you think if you're that committed to Russell Wilson, you don't sign Matt Flynn.
You wouldn't think. Right.
Yeah, if you now,
now keeping in mind, they signed him
before
prior to the draft, so they couldn't know he was going to be there.
Yeah, but if you would have if you thought Wilson, if you needed a quarterback, which they did, you know, you would have taken him first round. You would have signed somebody else to hold down the fort.
Probably. I can even see waiting on Russell Wilson because you feel like there's no way he's going in the first round. But mm-hmm. I just think there's an element of luck to some of this stuff. You look at San Fran, by the way, with the exception of Daniel Kilgore, who they say that not enough information to rank him, everybody there ranked as a good to high-quality starter. No elite guys on offense. The one elite player they feel they have is Patrick Willis. I think Bowman's been a better player than Patrick Willis for the past couple of years. But coming off major injury to himself, discounting that, still ranked among the best at his position there. Denver, New Orleans, Philadelphia, rounding out the top 5. In the division, where do you think Indy would fall?
10th.
12th, so in the ballpark, all right. Which is interesting, Andrew Luck is ranked as a good starter, which is like the Cecil Shorts level. I think it's safe to say at this point you probably go maybe one higher than that. I'm not saying he's proven to be on the Rodgers Peyton Manning level, but
he's top 50. He's a top 15 quarterback, top 12 quarterback, maybe top 10. He's on their color coded chart with their magic markers. He should be the second marker.
If you were drafting quarterbacks in the National Football League, right, and obviously it comes into play the rest of your roster. But if you're just drafting a quarterback not knowing what the rest of your roster is going to be, in other words, if you've got a ready-made team, Peyton Manning may be the guy you would take because you feel like in the next couple of years he's going to put you in position to win a Super Bowl. If outside of that, how many guys are you taking over Andrew Luck if you're an NFL GM?
I mean, I'd take Manning to win this year.
But if you didn't know you'd have the right, if I said draft a quarterback and then we'll tell you how good the rest of your team is going to be.
Well, I would go Manning, and I still think Brady's up there. I go Brees just because he can throw it. Aaron Rodgers, and then I get into the Luck conversation. In that next group, is it Luck? I like Philip Rivers, you know, and then
two up and down for me.
Yeah. So
for me, if it was the scenario where I didn't know how long we're talking about, like if you said Peyton Manning's going to be the quarterback of the Jags, he would improve their fortunes. it wouldn't make him a Super Bowl team, in my opinion. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I would definitely have Rodgers up there.
Johnny Football.
Johnny Football, Blake, and then probably Luck in that order. It's probably what I would go with. So they're 12th. Where do you think who comes next, Tennessee or Houston?
I bet they rank, knowing it's that website, I bet they like the stars, so they're going to rank Houston ahead. They're going to rank Houston 22nd, Tennessee 25th.
You're so cynical, you almost have them backwards. Tennessee 21 and Houston is 25, so you almost had it right on the money.
I don't know what Tennessee's plan is. I think they're terrible.
I don't think they're very good either. And, you know, if Jake Locker gets hurt this year... Last year, you had the fullback to play Ryan Fitzpatrick, who's not a great NFL quarterback, but
serviceable
NFL quarterback. I know they drafted Mettenberger.
Charlie Whitehurst.
Is Whitehurst the direct backup right now?
Yeah.
Who's going to play? The track record's there.
The track record of Locker is he'll be hurt a month into the season. Locker, right, is an average starter.
Who's their running back?
Well, they drafted Bishop Sankey out of Washington.
And
Sean Green is the incumbent. He had, I forget what the nature of the surgery was, though. He had surgery. He's going to miss everything until training camp. So a lot of the expectation is Sankey will be the opening day starter.
Yeah. It's always a red flag when there's a surgery and it says should be ready for camp. It means they're just starting behind the eight ball.
Right.
But, okay, Sankey, rookie running back. Was their receiver Nate Washington?
Kendall Wright had.
Kendall Wright.
Kendall Wright had 97 catches last year. Justin Hunter, who was a rookie last season. They rank him in the not enough information category. Kid who at one point, you know, coming out of Tennessee, people thought might end up a first round pick, but a bit of a knucklehead factor.
10-cent head deal.
With him. The top starters on Tennessee are considered in the category? Very good. We'll call it right below elite. Kendall Wright, Michael Roos, the left tackle, and then Jarrell Casey, who had a terrific year for them on the defensive line.
I think he's a blue chip player. They didn't rank him that. They ranked him
Casey.
Yeah,
they ranked him just below that. I think they were pretty selective on who they gave out the truly elite ranking to. And for Houston, they actually do have two blue chippers, but they've got a lot more question marks, I think, in there. J.J. Watt, no surprise. Mm-hmm. I think Andre Johnson still deserves that designation as an elite player. Arian Foster, not that high. He's ranked in the good category right now. Injury plague season, last season certainly. And Derek Newton, Brooks Reed ranked as basically poor starters among those. They have a lot of below average guys as well that'll be lining up, including Ryan Fitzpatrick.
What do they have? Henny.
They had Henny and Fitzpatrick on the
same tier. Player. Okay,
yeah,
I would basically. Mean whatever tier it is, they probably should be the same.
Yeah, and that's what they have there.
If you had to win week one in this division, okay, you take Luck. I would take Locker fourth. I would go Henny second, Fitzpatrick third.
I think they're about a push. Mm-hmm. I think that to me might come down to who has the better guys around him on that.
Because
day.
They're, I mean, their history, they're going to keep both teams in the game.
No, for the most part. And I think if you look at Houston, you can make the argument that they do have more blue chip talent, but I don't think you go to an, I don't think their 2-14 was Indy's 2-14 from a couple of years ago, where clearly you got the right quarterback in place and that went a large way to solving all your problems. So maybe if you put an Andrew Luck in Houston, you'd see the same thing. They didn't replace, Schaub with a guy like that. But that's a look into what Pro Football Focus thinks about the various teams. In the AFC South, ranked the Jags as the least talented roster in the National Football League. That's why they play the games.
I mean, Houston last year had the Jaguars at home, and they scored 6 points.
Right.
That's why, I mean, it means you're a long ways away.
Well, the quarterback play was atrocious last year. I mean, Schaub, what was the streak, Tony? How many consecutive games did he throw a pick six in?
At least three.
I was going to say four games. It was like an NFL record. They were tracking.
Because they had that two-score lead in the fourth quarter against Seattle. I think he threw two in that game.
And then Case Keenum came in and initially got the team moving, basically because he was ran around the backfield, extended the play, and just heaved it down the field to Andre Johnson. But it got him going. But I don't think he won a single game for him last year.
I don't think he did because, like, their thing is that he had a good first half, and then they figured him out in the second half, and
right.
He became Case Keenum.
Right, and that's kind of where they are right now. So Ryan Fitzpatrick, you're likely starter all season. I don't think. I mean, look, if they go 2 and 10. Maybe you see Tom Savage get a little time at the end of the year. But right now they don't have Andre Johnson. No. You would expect all these guys to ultimately show up and play. Not many guys willing to turn down the money. No. But Andre Johnson's got plenty to withstand a few fines for mandatory minicamps that he may miss along the way. So it'll be fun to watch that play out. Fun from the perspective of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Let the discontent happen in the city of Houston. We will come back. We'll take a look at the fan feedback question of the day, asking you, as Jag fans, to look back to the inaugural season, 1995. What is your favorite Jaguar memory from season number one in honor of Randy Jordan's birthday today? He, of course, scored the first touchdown in team history. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, Fat Tony here with you. It's a Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday. Jaguars Today continues on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday. Glad you're on board. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran from the Florida Times Union, Fat Tony, Lauren Brooks, Joe Fortunato, gang's all here. Most of us live at Everbank. We're missing you, Lauren. Missing you.
Nothing says sexy back like Lauren Brooks.
Well, wow. Well, thank you.
Even I could pick up on that easy transition.
You're gonna make Bawanko jealous.
Bro, Bawanko. Do you know what we're talking about?
No.
Yesterday? Luke's name came up, and Lauren said something to the effect of, "That's a handsome fellow," right? I believe is how she put it.
Yep.
And so by the end of the show, we had someone had dubbed them Bro-wanko. This is how it goes, and you got to combine your two names together. So we're looking for people to maybe come up with some signs at the open practices at minicamp.
Yep.
Hashtag Bro-wanko, stuff like that. Bro-wanko will look up, he'll think they're just spelling my name wrong. Little will he know.
Yeah, I'll still sign it in.
Right,
close.
Right, exactly. So then he'll
go, "Who's this other person signing this thing?"
Yeah, who is? I don't know who that is, but. Then you'll find out soon enough, Luke, all right? Lauren's going to kill me. Today, the Tom Bush Family Dealership's Fan Feedback Spotlight, asking Jaguar fans every day, what drives you today? We drove you all the way back to 1995 in honor of Randy Jordan scoring the first touchdown in team history. Able to look back on that with Brian Sexton a little bit earlier. We asked you for some of your favorite memories from the inaugural season of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Tony, what do the peeps respond with?
Here on Twitter, we got from Kevin, hashtag Jaguars today. The win at home against the Steelers was the highlight of that season for me by far. You would think that would be for a lot of fans out there here in the Jacksonville area. From Eric, we got, just being there was awesome. I was a junior in high school and worked as a vendor. Saw it all. Hashtag Jaguars today. And from Stevie, my favorite moment of 95 was the first time I saw the Jags on TV. I asked Dad who they were. He said, "That's the Jaguars. They're new." And I was in love. Hashtag Jaguars.
Now, Stevie, that's Irish Jaguar on Twitter, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who listens to the program dutifully from the Emerald Isle. And so I'm wondering, was he in the States listening to them or watching them? Or what was he doing? How did that whole thing come about? We'll have to get him on the program one of these days. He's already won a Jaguars Today t-shirt. So he will not win one today. Couple of other ones. My first NFL game was Jags Oilers in the Houston Astrodome for the Jags' first ever win. That one from Matthew. Sean Capello said either Mickey Washington's pick six for the first ever defensive touchdown, or that game against Houston where Jimmy Smith had a kickoff return, punt return, and a TD reception. And we're like, why don't we remember this game? And there's a reason it didn't happen, unfortunately.
He scored three touchdowns. Two touchdowns.
He's saying he scored in three different ways, kickoff, okay, punt, and he did have the three touchdown game against Baltimore a few years later.
They never broke 21 against either Houston game. So.
Right, and I think Tony looked up and said he didn't have a catch against Houston that year.
No.
Against Denver that season in 95, Jimmy had a touchdown reception and a kickoff return. I'm guessing that is where the memory banks started to go awry, somewhere around that point in time.
Yeah, at least according to Pro Football Reference, and maybe their numbers back in the mid-90s on something like punt returns aren't completely accurate, but according to them, Jimmy Smith never returned a punt in the regular season for the Jacksonville Jaguars at all. Never returned a punt.
I'm telling you it's easy to do. It's easy to get your memory all screwed up like that. You know, I told you, we were talking about it on the break. For years, I had convinced myself that I'd watched the Yankees sweep the Twins in a doubleheader in 78. It was just like this doubleheader stood out in my head because I talked to the television after Thurman Munson struck out, and I told Reggie Jackson to show him how it's done, Reggie. And clearly he heard me because he hit a home run, and it was like this magic moment in my childhood. And they played the Blue Jays, not the Twins.
Sure,
but
they did.
For 20-something years, I was convinced. Maybe it happened in an alternate reality. Not quite sure of how that whole thing went down. So
it wasn't really Reggie Jackson. It was Mickey Mantle. It was a dream state.
It was all a dream. Kramer was in there, and Costanza, I believe, as well, were part of that dream. You were not here for the 1995 season. What is your first standout memory of covering the Jacksonville Jaguars?
I'll give you from the first game I ever covered.
Okay.
It told me everything I needed to know about the head coach that was currently there. First drive of the season at Minnesota, they drive all the way down, fourth and about a fingernail at the goal line, kicks the field goal. I said, come on. It's the first game of the season. And they lost in overtime.
Well, I mean, first game of the season, I suppose you argue you don't want to, you know, gamble everything on one play and lose that first game of the season.
And from then on, the guy leading that team was tight as all get out, and the team responded, going 2-14.
There you go. All right.
he who not be named.
Apparently, Mr. Malarkey's name is dirt.
I'm trying to think of a positive thing from the first 2 years. The week three, like Cecil Shorts has come coming out party with the touchdown against Indy, because it was such a stunning thing, because that team really hadn't done a lot offensively in that game.
Right.
And, you know, it's sort of started him on his way up that year.
I'm trying to think. That's one of his coming out parties. I would think, you know, the Gabbert to Shorts against Minnesota.
Yeah,
kind of broke him into, you know, like, wow,
who is this guy?
Yeah. Right. I mean, going from two catches to, you know, an impact play that early in the season in a game that you still think they should have won. For you, Tony, going back to 95 or as back as far as you can go.
95, I only had the opportunity to go to one game. I went and saw them lose the home game against Cincinnati. But my most enduring memory of the 95 season was a game that I watched on television when they beat Pittsburgh. My parents went to the game, and I think my parents have been to two other Jaguar games together since, because it's the last time that I really saw my parents fight about something. My mom is a big-time Steeler fan, and because of that, my little brother is a big-time Steeler fan as well, and she was expecting her dad to come down, who was the reason she is a Steeler fan, to watch that game. So they had two tickets. In my mom's mind, that was her father's ticket. It was supposed to be a Steeler ticket. My dad went to the game. He got caught up in all the excitement of a new team, the opportunity to have the NFL in the city he lives in, and he was, in my mom's eyes, pulling for the Jaguars in that game. They got home. They came through the door. My dad just sat down on the chair. My mom didn't say a word. She came in, grabbed her keys, and walked back out. I look at my dad. I was like, what'd you do? He's like, I have no idea. It was 3 hours later before she came home, and she was just in a rage about my dad sitting in her father's seat and not pulling for the Pittsburgh Steelers. This is the last time I saw them really fight.
A lot of people today commenting on the Cleveland Browns, the Christmas Eve game that Brian talked about. You know, great way to end what was a long and torturous first season. It was interesting early on. I remember that Pittsburgh game as well. They had won back-to-back games for the first time.
Yep.
And they would go on to win 3 out of 4 in a stretch. And you thought, I mean, beating Pittsburgh, which Tom Coughlin made no bones about it, we're building this team to beat the top team in our division. We're going to have to play them twice every year. They've been the cream of the crop in the Central at the time for a while and historically forever. And to beat them out of the gates in season number one after they had gone 0-4, gotten that win against Houston. And then it almost made you feel like, for the first time, okay, maybe this thing will turn around. Maybe this thing will become kind of real as far as that goes. What were you going to quiz Brian on now that we've pulled him back here? Jimmy Smith, that's right.
Yeah, he had three touchdowns in Denver. in December of 1995.
He had three.
Three. He had one on a throwback from Desmond Howard on a kickoff return. He had one on a block punt. He blocked
punt. Okay,
and he picked it up and took it into the end zone, and then he had one as a receiver. And that was the first time that we thought, wow, this Jimmy Smith guy might be something.
Yes. See, that's why we've got the resource
but
right
it didn't,
next to us.
By the way, it didn't stop them. As much as they saw from him, it didn't stop them from signing Andre Rison and Keenan McCardell in free agency the next year. So it wasn't like this was an epiphany, but you said, wow, look at this guy run. He might really be something.
It didn't stop Jimmy from running either. I mean, he looked
nothing
at that, he
Jimmy.
Shrugged it off, and he just kept on going from that point on. I was just talking about how bad my memory is of games. Like, I can convince myself certain teams played, and it was completely other teams. We had somebody vote today. Their favorite memory was against Houston. They said Jimmy did it instead of Denver.
Yeah, it was in Denver.
And they had the punt return instead of the punt block. That's why we have Brian Sexton.
You want to know
on the Jaguars
today,
the most staff. Right
the most
here.
Impressive play of the game was John Elway rolling to his left. Remember, he's a right-handed quarterback. From about the 40-yard line on the Broncos side of the field and throwing to Andre Miller, the receiver. But he was off balance, and he threw it 65, 70 yards in the air on a rope and put it in for what ended up being in the push-ahead touchdown.
He turned out pretty good.
Yeah.
Elway.
Yeah, he was pretty good. He'd be the guy. I know there are a lot of names on this. If I was starting a team right now, I'd take
you.
Him.
All-time,
he would be my guy.
All-time guy
all-time
for
favorite.
Me up to this point in time.
All right, just call me anytime you need me to save you.
We appreciate it. That's exactly. Fortunato went running down the hall with perspiration dripping off of his brow and a good save. We got a hold and a save out of Sexton today. So there you have it. Look back, brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships, which includes Tom Bush Volkswagen, Tom Bush Mazda, Tom Bush BMW, Tom Bush Mini. You can visit TomBush.com if you need more information the next time you're in the market for a new or pre-owned vehicle, and follow them on Twitter, as I do, at Tom Bush Motors. And we appreciate all the tweets coming in today, all the Facebook posts, Facebook.com/JaguarsToday. Remember, use the hashtag Jaguars Today. The Twitter handle that's at Jaguars Today, nothing to do with the show. Feel free to follow them, feel free to not follow them, but nothing officially to do with the show, unlike at Ryan O'Halloran, which is the official Twitter designation of co-host extraordinaire Ryan O'Halloran.
It's been a bloody day for at Ryan O'Halloran.
Has it been a bad day after you basically threw Ace Sanders in the gutter early in the broadcast today?
I just brought it up. And then the other thing, I didn't think we were making news on Greg Roman, were we?
That he would have been the coach here?
Would he
been? I mean, that was the most speculated thing.
I think I've quoted Davis saying when the day he got hired, Dave Caldwell thought his two main guys were Greg Roman and Keith Armstrong, the Falcons special teams coach. He didn't even know Gus.
No, he didn't know Gus. So Gus got in the pipeline because he started to get some good word of mouth. Philly was looking at him.
Yeah. So might as well bring him down here because if Seattle had beaten Atlanta in that second round game, Gus wouldn't have been available.
Right, and the Jags ultimately decided they didn't want to wait the amount of time with San Francisco going to the Super Bowl. I remember interviewing Greg Roman. You probably did as well at the Super Bowl that year about the possibility he could have come here. It's all at Ryan O'Halloran. All complaints directed in that fashion. All feedback, please send it his way. All right, we got a break. Thanks again to Claude Nolan Cadillac. They bring you the show every Friday. We'll get you set for Joe C. Ryan the Hacker, Green T-Wig on vacation. That's coming up next. XL Primetime. Straight ahead, wrapping up Jaguars today on a Friday. Brought to you by Claude Nolan Cadillac, live from Everbank on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.